理课堂听 class.com。
The progress and the main trends of RMA. Interview with Dr. Martin C. Libicki, Senior Fellow of the Institute for National Strategic Studies, INSS, National Defense University.Please give an overview of the progress and the main trends of RMA.
To think about the history of the RMA requires starting about 20 years ago and going 30 years into the future. Now, of course, we cannot predict the future. In that, we can't always predict what kind of innovations will come. If I were to look 50 years ago,I would be looking before the invention of the transistor. Without the transistor, we cannot imagine the computer that can sit next to my desk. No one anticipated the transistor, yet when it came, it led to everything else. So to give you a practical example, how good are high energy lasers going to be? If you think that higher energy lasers will be cheap and effective,That's going to change the conventional battlefield very greatly. If you think high-energy lasers are going to be expensive and ineffective, then they're not very important. My hunch is that they're going to be ineffective and expensive, but I may be wrong. That's one reason why it's difficult to project out too far. Another is more fundamental. Military equipment...tends to evolve very quickly in wartime. In the 4 years between 1941 and 1945, military advanced greatly partly because new weapons were brought into production by 1945, and partly because we learned how to use weapons in 1945 that we didn't know how to use in 1941. Once war ends, the pressure to innovate drops off. Furthermore,Without war, you have a tendency to hang on to things that don't make much sense anymore. Colonel David Johnson, former head of academic affairs at NDU, said that the U.S. Navy's RMA took place on December 7, 1941. Until Pearl Harbor, the United States maintained battleships, and the U.S. maintained aircraft carriers.And it wasn't clear which of the two were going to dominate naval warfare, as the U.S. contemplated waging war with Japan across the Pacific. But when the battleships were sunk, we were left with the aircraft carriers, and the aircraft carriers were so effective in the Battle of Midway that nobody thought that battleships had much of a future, and we poured our money into aircraft carriers.I suspect that most of the philosophy that we brought to war in the European front in the 1980s was already obsolete. But we didn't know that because we didn't have a war and because we didn't have a test of those concepts. So therefore, we keep extending these concepts out into the future. Should a war take place in 30 years and we get to test concepts,A lot of things will change. It will accelerate matters. By the same token, if the U.S. finds itself in a competition with another power, it will be forced to question its own technological development. If the world stays as benign as it is today, chances in military technology will move more slowly. So, I can talk about the last 20 years because it happened.But I can't talk about the next 30 years, except to speculate. What do we see over this 50-year period, 1978 to 2028? First is the refinement and development of precision ammunition, to where if you can get a signature on a target, you can probably kill it. Now, when you add to this the fact that the U.S. and many other advanced countries...can now map the world very precisely, that means that you can now locate an object, you can also kill it. the combination of mapping and of GPS, Global Positioning System, means that basically, if you can see something, you can kill it. There are some qualifications to that statement. It doesn't pay to kill up a $10,000 truck with a $1 million cruise missile. Probably not if the U.S. does it, and certainly not if someone tries to do that to the United States. We can produce a $10,000 truck faster than anybody can produce a $1 million cruise missile. So you have to take that equation into account. At any rate, sometime in the next 5 to 10 years, the United States will complete its evolution of PGMs, precision-guided munitions. The second half of the RMA is how do we illuminate the battlefield? How do we see everything we're seeing? And a lot of that answer seems to be sensors, electro-optical, microwave, imaging sensors, acoustic sensors. You name it, we have it. We can put in every medium, and we can somehow fuse all this information together so we can get a real fine picture of the battlefield. Exactly what sensors, exactly how we do it, is yet to be determined. DOD will spend a great deal of thought in the early 21st century defining a constellation of sensors that can survive attack by the other side. For instance, we now put our most capable sensors on Boeing 707 platform, which are not stealthy, which are not maneuverable, which have to generate energy to get energy back. Right now, we can do it safely. Can we do that safely 10, 20, 30 years from now? I don't know. If not, we've got to figure out a way to put these sensors on smaller platforms that do not require human beings. That is why people are talking very excitedly about UAVs, which, once we learn to fly them reliably, will have a considerable military effectiveness. If you take a look at Global Hawk, you're taking a look at an extremely capable unmanned aerial vehicle that costs about $10 million. But you can also make UAVs that can be held with one hand and cost $1,000. But they don't fly as high, they don't carry as complete a sensor package, they don't have the endurance, and they probably crash a lot. But you use $5,000 UAVs completely differently than you use $10 million UAVs. And the main thing about a $5,000 UAV is that no one's going to shoot at it with a $100,000 missile. The result is that these things are much more survivable. We are in a confluence of two trends. The first trend is toward the dispersion of things, making a lot of small things. Consider the personal computer business. Mainframe computers are dead, but personal computers are thriving. There are a lot of other analogies as well. The second thing is that we want to network everything together. One sensor may see something using one mode, and another sensor sees it using another mode. And one wants to bring these readings together to start correlating things. I hear a tank. Do you see a tank? Are we getting the radar reflection of the tank? Does it sound like a tank? Etc. When we put these things together, called data fusion, we can learn a good deal more about the battlefield. If we can get that kind of information very quickly, then we'll want to take advantage of that information very quickly. We have at the same time dispersion and integration, and that's something with which we're going to be occupied for the next 30 years.